which is run very efficiently by Rabbi Singer, Pesach is really negeya almost all of the RCs also, not just the Pesach department. And the reason is that we deal with some companies that we have, we certify the products on a year-round basis as kosher l'Pesach. Some companies we have, we certify some of the products year-round as kosher l'Pesach. And even more common is there's people constantly asking, is this chametz or kitnius? We know this is not for Pesach. Is it chametz or kitnius? And we actually have a program where we certify products as chametz-free. Chametz-free, the translation of that into our language is kitnius. But kitnius in our language means that there's no chametz in it at all, meaning that if we have a Pesach product and there's a little bit of chametz in the formula, that little bit of chametz is only a little. It's bottle, it's before Pesach, it's not a maimed. We won't certify that product for Pesach. We just don't do it. Whether you're allowed to use it, whether you're over bal yiro or bal yimotze, that's a whole different situation. But we just don't certify that for Pesach. When we certify something as chametz-free or as kitnius, it's actually with the same rules that we apply to Pesach. If a product that all the ingredients are kitnius is made on equipment that chametz is made on, we will not certify that product as kitnius. We won't certify it as chametz free. And people get questions about this. They look at the ingredients and they make decisions without really understanding where and what and how chametz can be involved in this kind of production. Both. Yeah, dry also. Dry chametz is as bad as liquid chametz. I don't know what you mean. We're not going to allow dry chametz into a dry product. We won't. Well, if the equipment is clean, then we'll do it. But whether you need kashering or not, that's each one has to be looked at individually. But let me give you a few examples of where there could be chametz, and people don't even realize that it could be chametz. There's a very common ingredient known as caramel color. We all know that caramel color is basically sugar. It's a sugar syrup that you brought up to a high enough temperature. I think it's around anywhere between 176 and 186, something like that. And if you brought up that liquid solution to that temperature, it's going to start turning brown, also known as caramelizing. Not only will it turn brown, it'll change the taste also. And this is the way that you make Yerushalmi kugel. You put the sugar into the oil, you bring it up, and now you got beautiful brown coloring. Caramel color is not used that often as a flavoring agent, but it's used as a coloring agent because it loses some of the sweetness, loses some of the potency, but it's very, very good for color. There's all different grades of caramel color, all different numbers that they attach to it of how powerful it is. There's powdered, there's liquid, there's all kinds of variations of caramel color. In the U.S., most caramel color is made from corn sugar. In Europe, there's caramel color made from glucose syrup, which is made from wheat. We've seen it, we know about it, it's very common in Europe. You have and in our system, caramel color a whole year round, liquid caramel color is a group one. If you're going to have caramel color as an ingredient in a product, you have to know that it's not chametz. I've actually seen caramel color from Europe in Chicago. It was powdered caramel color. It was there because they had a need for GMO-free product. You cannot get GMO-free corn sugar in the U.S. It doesn't exist. All the corn in the U.S. is GMO. So this place had to get non-GMO caramel color in order to formulate their product. So you do have caramel color that's real, real chametz in the U.S., and that stuff was real chametz. It's fine. The place is not Pesach Dik. That's fine. But if someone wants something for Pesach, and someone's asking, is this kidneys or is it chametz? You have to know what you're looking at in order to answer that question intelligently. Caramel color can easily be chametz, and not just in Europe. Europe has invaded the United States in that respect. It's a lot of non-GMO product that can only be made in Europe that's here. We had a situation just recently where a company wanted to make emulsifiers, and they needed sorbitol to make polysorbates, and it had to be GMO-free. There's a European market that wants GMO-free, there's a Japanese market, and it's becoming a much bigger market. Actually, one of the final customers of this was a place that's making anti-foams that's selling the anti-foams to Europe. And so even though it's manufactured here in the United States, it had to be certified GMO-free. So they ordered GMO-free emulsifiers. Now, to get sorbitol that's GMO-free and that's not chametz is pretty difficult. It can be done. There's places that do it. It's expensive. It's very tedious. It's a lot of work that goes into it. It can be done. But if you see, but there is GMO sorbitol being sold. There is non-GMO sorbitol being sold in the United States that's either chametz or manufactured on chametz equipment. It exists. Now, there's another step in the sorbitol process. Even in the United States, where all the sorbitol in the U.S. that's manufactured in the U.S. is actually coming from corn sugar. Even there, not all that sorbitol would we allow into a chametz-free product. And that's for a very simple reason. The sorbitol is really hydrogenated glucose or dextrose. You take glucose or dextrose, you hydrogenate it, you rearrange the molecules in there, and it becomes sorbitol. Now, when you make glucose and when you make dextrose, and you start with corn, you can't just go into the farmer's market and buy corn and say, you become sorbitol, you become dextrose. It doesn't work that way. What they're doing is they're taking the corn, they're washing it, and they're getting the starch off of the corn. After they get the starch off the corn, they're treating it with various enzymes to turn that starch into the exact product they want. They can make glucose, they can make dextrose, they can make maltodextrin, they can make maltose, they can actually process it further and make fructose, and it's all starting from the cornstarch. And it has to do with all the different enzymes they use. There are enzymes that we certify as chametz-free. It's actually, we're going in a circular system. Because to make these enzymes, you need glucose and dextrose. To get the glucose and dextrose, you need the enzymes. So it's the enzyme companies that actually create a lot of the demand for chametz-free dextrose, and then they're manufacturing the enzymes to be able to be for the dextrose factories to make a chametz-free. It's one big circle, and then there's other users of this dextrose also. But now you take the dextrose and you're going to hydrogenate it into sorbitol. That's great. That's wonderful. If you're going to use a chametz enzyme to make the dextrose, we're not going to call that sorbitol chametz-free. Every spec sheet and every description of it is going to say that it's made from corn. we will not certify it chametz free, and we, is it mutter to use on Pesach? Ask your local Orthodox rabbi. There are heterim to use it. It's not the simplest question in the world. Is it a maimed? Is it not a maimed? What exactly is the definition of maimed? That's not something we're going to go through at this session, but it's complicated. Does a maimed mean you can't make it without it? Does a maimed mean that you're going to turn a liquid into a solid the way you do by cheese? You're taking liquid milk by adding a davar ha-maimed. There we know the rennet is davar ha-maimed. By adding the maimed, you're creating a solid. Is that the taich of a maimed? There's all kinds of different opinions. Question of the rashba, whether you can't make it without it. Even though it's not a maimed, if you can't make it without it, it's normally made that way. The Rashba says it's not bottle b'shishim. You don't say bittel on that. It's nothing to do with avida l'taima. There's a Rashba, but there's a lot and a lot of different tshuvas written on this. The bottom line is we will not certify this product chametz free. If a place wants to use this dextrose as a feedstock to make other products, for example, you take dextrose, you can make sodium erythorbate eventually out of it. You can make citric acid out of it. You can make sorbitol out of it. From that sorbitol, you can make ascorbic acid out of it. If the enzymes in the dextrose are not certified chametz free, we will not certify the down-the-line products as chametz free. We just don't do it. So when you're looking at a product that the ingredients tell you that there's no chametz in it, don't be so sure. Someone mentioned right when we walked into the room that the soda on the table over there, it's only kidneys. Well, there are enzymes that are used to make it to make fructose. Fructose is a little bit different than dextrose, and some of the enzymes that are made to convert dextrose into fructose can be chametz. And Sfardim are doing all kinds of things without knowing what's going on. When we get a request to certify, if we would ever get a request to certify Coke as chametz-free, we would make sure the right enzymes are being used. I can't help it what the Sfardim decide to do. We will not certify it in such a way. But when we certify something chametz-free, we certify it with almost the same rules, almost identical rules as certifying a product for Pesach. A Pesach product we won't certify if it has any chametz in it. A product that's certified OU kidneys, we will make sure that there's no chametz in it and there's no chametz equipment being used without kashering, without a kashering in between. This is the way that the question is if they even know about it. That's a different question. What? If I'm not mistaken, there's a document that that for Pesach we are makbid on the Rashba, and for year round we're not. But whatever it may be, as far as there's many different heterim to use the product. We will not certify it chametz free unless it actually meets these rules. Now, again, you have caramel color, can easily be chametz. Citric acid made from corn is not necessarily going to qualify for chametz free. Someone wants it to qualify for chametz free, it'll have to meet these rules. Now we go another step also. Take a refinery that's starting with cornstarch. Taking the cornstarch, what you're doing is you're soaking the corn in a tank. It's called steeping the corn. And you take the water from that tank and you concentrate it, you actually have something known as corn steeped liquor. very nice thing. Then you're going to take the starch off of that, and you're going to process the starch into different products, dextrose, glucose, maltose, fructose, different streams you have. It's all being fed by the cornstarch slurry. When you make dextrose, you're not going to get a very concentrated dextrose. It's going to be, let's say, the original dextrose that you make after the enzyme finishes working. Let's say it's anywhere from 30 to 60% dextrose. You're not going to be able to sell it. Dextrose is sold at much higher concentrations. There's 90%, there's 95%. What they do is they take this dextrose solution and they evaporate off the water. The more water you take out of there, the more sugar is left in the final, in the product. So it'll become much sweeter. That water that you evaporated off is very valuable water. First of all, it's nice and clean and sterile. There's nothing in there because you cooked it. Second of all, it's hot. So there's energy that was used. When you evaporate it off, you use heat. And there's a lot of places that are recovering that water from the evaporator. They're taking that water and they're using it back in the beginning of the process. They're using it to steep this corn because they want it to be hot water. It works much better that way. So you can have, take maltose for example. Maltose is a great example, because maltose usually uses a chametz enzyme. For maltose, generally, you're using a beta amylase, which is from barley. The maltose is, I can't say always, but maltose is usually a chametz tikka enzyme. It's very difficult to find chametz-free maltose. I don't know that we've ever done it, but it's a very difficult thing to find. So now you have maltose, 65% solution, and you have a lot of water that came out of that. That water is going to go back to the corn steeping tank. You're going to steep the corn, you're going to get the starch, and that starch is now going to go to the dextrose stream. We're going to use a chametz-free enzyme to make dextrose. But you have water that came off of a stream where you use the chametz enzyme. You have that evaporator water, which was produced with a chametz tikka enzyme. Can you call maltose chametz? I don't know if you can call it chametz. That's a matter of great debate among the people that understand how it's made. There's people that debate the issue that don't understand how it's made also, but we won't reckon with them. But now we have a problem with this water going back to the dextrose. And we have this situation in some places, and we will not certify the dextrose made under those conditions as chametz-free. When we do something chametz-free, we're going through it from the beginning to the end. Just like we would for Pesach, we're doing it for chametz-free also. So you can have dextrose made from corn, and this factory never saw anything but corn, and it will not qualify for chametz-free, even though the enzymes in the dextrose are chametz-free. The water is not chametz-free. And we had a different situation where a place had to make 90% dextrose solution. And they found a great way to do it. Why should they reset the line to stop the evaporation at 90%? They took 95% and they watered it down. The water they used came off an evaporator that was doing a wheat product. And it was great water. So now you have a situation where the 90% was not chametz-free and the 95% was chametz-free. And if you look at this on paper, it says, somebody missed the boat over here. Someone doesn't know how to add and how to subtract. What happened? How are you going to do this? It's the same evaporator that's making it, but you have to know the process. And the process is actually unique to every company. Every company uses the same general process. but they don't, but in the final product and how they do it or what, they're extremely secretive about it, because these couple of pennies that they save in energy costs reflect millions of dollars over the year. So as far as chametz free, when we certify a product chametz free, we mean it. What's negeya, most of the RCs in the office that don't deal with Pesach stuff, there are many, many factories that are not doing a special Pesach production. We have factories that have some products certified as Pesach all year round, and some products are not, based on the formula. But it can't just be the formula. You have to know every last item that's going on in the factory. You have to know where it's being used. If they applied for a new ingredient, officially, the computer is supposed to catch it, that if they applied with OU Direct, at least, if the system is working properly, the computer is supposed to catch it and flag it, that since this plant makes Passover also, it needs an RC to look at it. But the RC has to know what he's looking at. Now, Rabbi Singer is not here, but the emes is, if you have any suffix in the world, you may have a chametz issue over here, and it may affect Kalim. The one to consult with is Rabbi Singer, who will probably tell you to come to me. But I don't mind if you go to him, and I don't mind if he decides. You want to come to me, you can come to me, but this is what I get paid for, and this is what I'm trained to do. But this is so common that this happens, and the Pesach department knows nothing about it. The reason is we have a wonderful Pesach department here, which is generally busy with Pesach productions 12 months a year. But something that's certified as Pesach all year round does not necessarily find its way to the Pesach department, and it should. Every time an ingredient is requested, and we have it, and it's very common, and eventually we can end up with a fiasco because of it. And this is actually a reason why any plant that's making both Pesach and not Pesach products, if you don't have your Schedule A accurate, you're waiting for an accident to happen. For example, if you take a Schedule A of a plant that makes both Pesach and not Pesach, and there's sorbitol on that Schedule A, and someone attached sorbitol, liquid sorbitol, group 1, you're waiting for an accident to happen. You can't do that, because you will end, the worst you'll end up with is the chametz might end up in the Pesach product. The best you'll end up with is contamination of equipment. And sometimes you have real contamination of equipment. It can happen. If you actually get sorbitol from Europe, which is wheat-based, which exists, it doesn't just exist, there's a lot of it around over there. And you're going to make let's call it a polysorbate or a sorbitan monostearate. Sorbitan monostearate actually can have 25 to 40%, depending on on which one it is, of sorbitol. You now have your reactors and your storage tanks and your ethoxylation tanks and your flakers. You have now contaminated that with chametz because of one little mistake. Sorbitol, any source. Anyone that has a plant that has anything on the Schedule B that's certified for Pesach, and this is a reason why the Schedule Bs have to be accurate also, you have to really, really look into the Chaymer Inyan every time you're approving an ingredient, because it's not a regular all kosher, all power of plant. Once there's a Pesach status or even a chametz free status, it's the same thing. The places where we are makel, and it's important to know, just the Olam here should know this, Kitnius is definitely bottle in before Pesach. Kitnius is bottle bereiv. There's no question about that. When we're, most people around here don't come in on Pesach, so we won't go into that right now. I'm not prepared to answer that now. It's a good question. I did not prepare enough to answer that question now. It's a good question. Rabbi Ganach just answered it. Good. As far as a policy, we do not kasher kalim between kidneys and chametz. We don't kasher kalim. Another thing that we do is, and this is very negeya on the chametz free syrups that we do, but it's negeya in other places too. If I have chametz enzymes being used to make a product, we all know that the enzyme itself, there's much more than shishim against an enzyme. Even if the enzyme is chametz stick, I could have a real chametz stick enzyme, and it's certainly batel b'shishim. However, we're not going to certify that product as Pesach. What we will do is we're not going to make an issue about the kalim where those enzymes were used, because davar hamaymid loy batel. First of all, I'm not sure that it's called a maimid, and second of all, we don't say chanan on chametz before Pesach, and therefore the amount of enzyme that's going to get into the kalim, even heated kalim, is certainly batel, and therefore if a place is making maltose or fructose with a chametz enzyme and the dextrose stream is a Pesach enzyme, we have no issue with that, and we're going to call that dextrose chametz free. This is the way that our chametz free program works. Whether you want a dingzach with that or not, as far as whether it should aser the kalim or not, it's Thursday, we might even have a rabbi here that you can go dingzach with him on that, but this is the way that our programs are set up over here. A chametz free program is actually set up that way. But the emes is you really have to know what's going in where, because let's take a simple case where we don't have a heating issue. Let's take a case where they're making potato chips and there's seasonings, right? They're using seasonings over there. That's wonderful. We have all kinds of parva seasonings, and then you want to go and make a Pesach product there. We're generally not going to have potato chips that are certified Pesach the whole year because the seasonings are not Pesach. So over there, what do? We make a special run, and we have the seasoning line totally clean before we start. A whole year round, seasoning line is not necessarily clean. What we have is, we have either an all-parva plant, or it's a plant that's making dairy also, and the dairy is made after the parva, and there's a cleanup after that. But over there, you don't really have the bigger issue of kalim. Where you do have the issue is, if they're making a seasoned product, and let's call this, it's very common now in the snack industry, it's really taken off. They have what's known as snack pellets, which they put through an extruder. I think the simplest example that anyone with children or grandchildren knows is these super snacks, these awesome super snacks. That's an extruded product. What they do is they take this snack pellet. The snack pellet is made with all kinds of interesting ingredients, including seasoning. There's seasoning, there's coloring. The snack pellet is made, then you're taking that pellet and you're processing it further. You're either putting it through an oven or a fryer, or you're rehydrating it and cooking it again, and it's all kinds of things that you can do with the snack pellet. The snack pellet itself has seasoning in it. You want to kasher the machinery that's making that snack pellet. Let's say they tell you, we're going to make a snack pellet without any seasoning. And we're going to take this snack pellet, we'll season it later after it comes out of the fryer on a different line. The snack pellet itself is going, you're taking basically a dough, may not have flour in it, but it's the consistency of a dough. It's going through an extruder. An extruder means, in plain simple language, I think everyone here is old enough to remember when people made chopped liver with a grinder, that's actually an extruder. What's happening is the pressure is pushing it through those holes. That's an extruder. An extruder, there's tremendous pressure coming, pushing it through a mold and coming out. That extruder is usually, the product going into there is hot, and the extruder part itself usually has an electric element in there to keep the stuff hot and moving. If it solidifies, you may need a jackhammer to get it apart. That extruder, if you used 3% caramel color in there from wheat, and this is not just something off the top of my head, we had this. This was being done at a plant in Europe, and then they wanted to make a Pesach production. To kasher the extruder is a difficult thing because basically when the product goes through there, it's not liquid. It's pretty much solid. It's blilasa ova. And now you have an electric element in there heating it. So if you'd really like to do Lieben on the extruder, I suggest you buy an insurance policy to cover you for the damages you'll cause. Whether you can kasher with Hagala is very, very debatable. Now, every factory is different, every extruder is different. But generally, that part of the extruder is heated. And depending on what they're putting in, and especially places that are doing these snack pellets, most of them are going to put seasoning in there. Some of those seasonings can easily be chametzdik. Barbecue seasonings usually have yeast in there. Some of the yeasts are definitely chametz. Yeast is not always not chametz. You can get yeast that's not chametz, but the yeast that's used in flavorings, a lot of times those are chametzdik. One of the big yeast company in Europe, most of their yeast is chametz. They're using a wheat-based glucose to grow it on. Most of the yeast over there is chametz. So you can actually have chametzdik ingredients in the snack pellet, and now you get an application. Look, here's the formula for this one. Can I call this kidneys? You have to know what's going in, and you have to know where the ramifications are. You can have an unflavored and an uncolored one going through, and now you have questions of kalim. Let's go to another direction. Let's go to citric acid. Citric acid's easy. We started with dextrose. We had chametz-free dextrose. You managed to get chametz-free dextrose. They have a culture. You can take all the dextrose you want and wave all the magic wands you want. The dextrose won't turn into citric acid. You have to put in a specific culture of bacteria which is going to take that dextrose and turn it into citric acid. That culture is grown in the laboratory. Depending on what the factory is using, that culture can easily be grown on chametz. I've seen it. I actually was in a place where it was very primitive. It wasn't China, of course. It was very primitive, but they actually had wheat and barley stalks growing there. In a little bit of soil. Looked like a flower pot, but they had wheat and barley stalks, and they were growing the culture on that. It might be mutter, it might not be mutter, depending on where and what they're doing. But every culture growth is, you want to use a culture in the citric acid, you have to know what is happening. Now, the emesis, after we finished covering Pesach, my plan was to go to enzymes and growth of enzymes and go into what goes on over there and what the shilas over there are, because it's something people should know. But some of these cultures are literally grown on chametz. You have to know where the cultures are actually grown in various stages. You have solid agar, and you have test tubes, and you have a slant, and you have the first tube, and then you have the second one, and then you have the liter, and then you have the seed fermenter, which is only 30 liters, only 100 liters, and each one of them can have a separate formula. And if you get a normal flow chart from there, it's going to say culture gets injected here. Unless you're going to go into the details of it, you're not going to realize what can go on. So you can actually have citric acid, which is totally made from corn. Where I saw it was actually being made from sweet potato. It's made from sweet potato, and the culture was being grown on wheat and barley. I also saw a place that they switched it after a few years. I went into the laboratory and I looked in the refrigerator, and I saw 2 kilos of fresh tomatoes. I said, "Ah, that's wonderful! I can have a tomato with my lunch." And they said, "No, we use tomatoes as a growth medium for the culture." And if you work in that industry, there's something known as tomato agar. And this place wasn't buying that because it was too expensive. They bought tomatoes. It was one person's job to bring 2 kilo of tomatoes every morning from the supermarket, so this person could do their shopping on the way to work too, because they were on company time. And it went into the lab. They put it into a food processor, and you had a tomato puree, and that was being used to grow the culture. They don't get fresh tomatoes there anymore. I was back there several years later. I couldn't get a fresh tomato there. They stopped using it. But the strangest things can be used. I mean, there are places where we've seen they grow a culture on something called BHI. I'm sure everyone here knows what BHI is. It's initials of brain-heart infusion. It's not very kosher. Some of the things that they use to grow it on are actually real basar b'chalav too. But there's chametz that could be used. Again, you want to call a product kitnius lemahadrin, as some people will term it. There's a lot of work that goes into it. And just to call a product chametz free, just by looking at an ingredient statement, is not taking into consideration kalim. It's not taking into consideration the water that was used with chametz. And these things are something, when we do the job, and Baruch Hashem, I really feel that we do the job well. We really put a lot of work into it. I don't think that we're compensated enough for all the work that we do. I mean, as far as the company goes, they ask, can we call this kitnius? And we do it. They don't realize how much work we have to put in order to call it kitnius. They want a special pace of production. They know they have to pay for it. But just to be declared kitnius, it's almost the same amount of work. That's how much work goes into investigating everything that goes into there. We have a product now that we're working on an application now, and Amir Tzashem, it looks like it's going to happen. There's a ingredient which has a very scary name. It's called maltol, M-A-L-T-O-L. It's used in flavorings. It's very common used in flavorings. It has nothing to do with malt. Don't get scared that it's malt. But maltol is usually made from something called furfural. Furfural is made either from oats or from corn cobs. And we have a place that wants to make a natural maltol kosher l'Pesach. And we're actually working on the application, and we'll probably have a real kosher l'Pesach maltol, which is very, very difficult to get, but it can actually help revolutionize the flavor industry as far as Pesach goes. To have a Pesach maltol is something people are looking for. There's a factory now that wants to do it, and we're actually dispatching people to see some of the raw materials. They're buying furfural from a specific place where the process flow looks good, but that doesn't mean anything. We're going to go and we're going to inspect it. We're going to go to the manufacturer of the maltol. We're going to kasher. We're going to have Ashgacha Tzmidis there. And anyone will tell, and they can give you they'll attest to the fact that this maltol, this batch, is only made from corn cobs. It never came into contact with oats. and GMO-free, the works. They'll give you everything. And you can easily have chametz over here, because a furfural factory can use different raw materials. The maltol factory makes literally, I think we have around 500 different items on our Schedule B for this factory for all year round, including all kinds of chametz-dikka things. But it can be done, and Baruch Hashem, we're up to the challenge, and we're doing it. But it, when you're looking at an ingredient legend, and you're looking at a Schedule A, and someone's asking you, is this kitnius? Is there any shiloh chametz? We had situations where people ask, and Baruch Hashem, we answer honestly about it. They ask us about various nutritional supplements and baby formula items, and our answer is it may contain a mashahu of chametz, but even if it does, it's batel. Okay, thank you. Hello. Okay, one second. Okay, Rabbi said this is it. I have to take this call. Thank you.